No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth, and I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul, pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole, gonna lose control tonight. What do you want?
Good morning. That sunshine is lovely. Those temperatures are brisk. Minus 25 degrees with that wind chill this morning. Oh, Canada. And then back up, like Glenn Pelche just told us, onto the, I mean, not the plus side, but anything above zero is a plus, right? And you know what I did yesterday? I think I made that kind of extra few centimeters fall. Yesterday, I went to school to pick up my son after school, and he came out, and he was fierce, very irritated with his mother because I had forgotten the toboggan, and we have a really great hill at our school, he tells me that I made, you know, some, you know, pact with him that I would bring the toboggan. And so in order to, you know, kind of pick your battles and deflate the situation as they teach us to do in the parenting books, I said, okay, well, I'm sorry that you're disappointed that I don't have the toboggan. Still not really a lot of snow, hun. You know, we can still see the grass and a lot of mud patches through the snow. So how about this? If we get a little bit of snow overnight, mommy will bring the toboggan with her after school tomorrow. So now today is tomorrow. And I am, you know, legally bound to bring the toboggan to school today. Also, it's minus 25, 26. And like we were talking about earlier this week with winter, I just have found that the best way to do it is just to embrace it in some way. So, you know, we ski as a family. We skate out. We like our outdoor rinks. We try to do that a lot. And I'm not trying to sound like the perfect Pinterest mom here, because hell, we all know that that is a lie. But I just try to engage with it in some way so that I can kind of, well, first of all, stay warm. Because if you're moving, you just kind of stay a little warmer. So you can bet that my ample ass will be going up and down that hill this afternoon just to stay warm and get, you know, the body moving as we go. Up, back up the hill. And then when I was talking to my boyfriend about it last night, you know, I told him I had to really, you know, diffuse the situation after school because he was very annoyed with me. And Scott said to me, can you imagine us saying that to our mothers, you know, 30 plus years ago? You didn't bring the toboggan, and having a bit of a pitch and a fit. Scott said, my mother would have said that. Yeah, get in the car, and now you're not tobogganing for the entire winter. That's not how we do it anymore, is it? Okay, did you guys know this? Did you know that Mercury is in retrograde right now, Polly? Oh, Polly's already rolling his eyes at me. Polly, Mercury is in retrograde right now.
I've heard you talk about this. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, that means from Earth, Mercury appears to be moving backwards.
I still have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it actually isn't really moving backwards. It just appears to be moving backwards. And the astrology community says that this Mercury retrograde can affect relationships, communication, and travel plans too. Well, that's not good for this time of year, is it? Right?
When did this start? What was the date? Like this week?
No, it started December the 3rd.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so here, I'm just going to give you a couple of tips here from the astrology experts on how to make your life not completely go in the pooper during Mercury retrograde. Okay, when it comes to communication, you cannot make fast decisions. Communication issues come up in relationships, but during Mercury retrograde, you need to take more time with decisions, especially when it comes to relationships. Like, don't break up with anybody right now. Don't do it, because it's probably just this backwards planet's messing with your mind. The second thing you need to do is don't jump to conclusions. I feel like I've been a little conclusion jumpy as of late. I should have read this on December the 3rd.
By the sound of this, my relationship has been in Mercury retrograde since 2011. This describes my relationship to a T. Don't assume. Getting on each other's nerves. Keep going.
Okay. Okay. Well, you Mercury retrograde is in the sign of Sagittarius now. Sagittarius is a truth-seeking and a truth-telling sign. So that means that the motivation for finding out the truth is kind of heightened during Mercury retrograde for everybody. So don't jump to conclusions, Polly. Wait a sec. You want me to tell Marnie this or should I just keep telling you? Keep telling you. Okay, well, you're here. Oh, here's a good one that's not going to go so well for any of us this season. When it comes to money in Mercury retrograde, avoid big purchases. But it's Christmas.
Yeah, it's Christmas. Hello.
Like, do you think if somebody opens like a little tiny willy-nilly gift on Christmas that they'll accept, well, it's Mercury retrograde. I couldn't buy you anything fantastic. Yeah, I don't know about that one. That one might be hard. Big ticket items. Don't buy cars, electronics, or even shoes. Often we rarely end up needing or using what we purchased during a retrograde cycle. This is a test in patience. Okay. And finally, give yourself time to distress. You need to have extra time to deal with the deep emotions that surface for lots of people during Mercury retrograde.
Well, New Year's Eve is coming up, so there'll be lots of drinking, lots of time to de-stress, right?
I guess so. I just hope you're not in one of those party situations where somebody brings the drama, right? But then it's over by then. It's only till the 22nd, Polly. We've only got a few days left to deal with this. Only till the 22nd. But again, this time of year, de-stress, we re-stress during this time of the year. Everybody's going somewhere. Everybody's got to be somewhere. Everybody's got something to do. Okay. So that's from the astrology community. The astronomy experts say that Mercury retrograde is a big pile of fiddle-faddle.
So there's a big argument between the astrology community and the astronomy community.
That's correct.
They're fighting.
NASA says baloney. And Mercury retrograde astrologers say, okay, then you just go about your day. Okay, well, good. I hope that helps somebody today. But then you know what happens? You go, then, oh, it's Mercury retrograde. That's why this happened. That's why that happened. Like, it's kind of like the horoscopes. You know, people who read the horoscopes every day, and then they kind of, anything that does happen, they make it fit what that horoscope said, even if it's a real big stretch, you know? Okay. Okay, what are we going to do today? I had a situation in a restaurant yesterday that I found to be incredibly annoying and inconsiderate. And it involved a child. So I'm going to tell you what that is coming up. Do you remember that video? I think it was last week. It went pretty viral of what was purported to be a starving polar bear. Did you see this? This video of this polar bear this poor animal really did look like it was, you know, in dire straits. It didn't look healthy. It kind of went around the world. But Tristan Hopper from the National Post says everybody got something wrong about that video of the starving polar bear. So we're going to talk to him after 9:30 and investigate that a little further. Oh, Polly, this one will be good. Surprising ways swearing is improving your life. Whew, let's make sure we have time for that one. Why you should curse. Some of us don't actually need a reason. Some of us, I suppose, need to be encouraged to let that colorful language fly. So that's on the way for you, too. Let's start here this morning. We are always concerned with families and our food bills. And this article came out earlier this week about Canadian families need to expect their food prices to rise. The annual food bill for Canadian families will go up in 2018. To talk more with us about that study, Dr. Erna Van Duren, who's a professor from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Guelph. Dr. Van Duren, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
Great.
Have I pronounced your last name correctly?
You've got it absolutely right.
Oh, wonderful. Good news. Okay, so let's get into this. It could, because when I read the headline, annual food bill for Canadian families expected to rise by $348 in 2018, I think I assumed, like most people would, that that was due to, rising food costs at the grocery store. But it doesn't seem to be the case.
I think we are going to see food prices increase in a couple of key areas. And I heard what you were chatting about with respect to your kids. I think some of this is actually kid-driven. A lot of us spend a lot more money at food service than we actually pay attention to. And we expect that about $208 of that $348 increase will actually come from food service. Now, that's not going to a full-service restaurant. Often, that's stopping for a snack on the way to tobogganing. Often, that's stopping for lunch because, we were dropping our kids off early in the morning and, we need a bigger lunch. And the food service industry has done a really good job of adapting to Canadians' changing lifestyles. I think the other place we're going to see bigger increases is in veggies. And that's probably due to the fact that more families are trying to eat more vegetables, but also, La Nina climate patterns. Those happen from time to time. And we expect that this year rainfall might be below normal in the southern U.S. and some of the areas that we import vegetables from. So vegetables will probably, go up in price. So that, may be good news or bad news, depending whether you're a kid or a mom, right?
Yeah, totally different perspectives for sure. So that increase that, $208 when it comes to, like you mentioned, eating out or eating on the run, opting for something that is perhaps like pre-prepared, really does speak to lifestyle, doesn't it? That, most of us are two income families. Most of us are busy. Most of our children are in some sort of activity. Sometimes you're picking up one child, dropping off another, and, you can be the best mom in the world and have some snacks in the car, but, eventually, they tire of goldfish and maybe want to hit a drive-through.
Yeah, unfortunately, food service is, starting to understand in spades that, families want better options. And food service is thinking, about options so you can feed your kids healthier snacks. But grocery stores are getting into this business, too. I can sympathize with you as a busy mom, and many of us parents are in that category. Sometimes it's really easy to pick up a healthy lunch from a grocery store, big or small, lots of those in the KW, Guelph, larger area. And so you're going into a grocery store, but you're buying something that's really competition or like a food service item, like a pre-made salad, pre-made smoothies and that kind of thing. So the way that the food offerings are expanding and becoming easier to access 24 hours a day is really going to drive food service bills up. So that's good for restaurants. I think it's good for parents. I think it's good for people who take the time to, understand the value that they can get from food service, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those pre-roasted chickens at the grocery store, I actually, say thank you to the chicken when I'm leaving with it, because it really kind of changes your day. If you have that chicken, you can do some broccoli, you can do some rice, and, your food prep time goes down from, maybe an hour to 10 or 15 minutes, which is, it's gold. What's your time worth?
And, you hit it right on the head. We'd been moms like in the 1950s and 1960s, you and I would have been spending 2 hours a day preparing the family meal. Now people work, moms and dads alike. You still want to put a healthy meal on the table for your family, but there are great options out there. I think the key thing for people to start really thinking about is, how to get value for your money. So buy vegetables, not necessarily the ones that you like the best, but the ones that are on sale, because vegetable prices fluctuate a lot during the year. And, you know, sometimes we see spikes in certain vegetable prices. Don't buy those that week. Buy something else. And, you know, when you're shopping for your, you know, weekly groceries, you know, see if you can buy what's on sale and learn how to cook with the ingredients that are on sale. I mean, I had an interesting experience last week. I thought, wow, you know, it's exam time. We have lots of work to do here. You know, let's make a big lasagna. Well, you know, beef prices weren't the best deal last week. Pork prices were. So it would have been better, you know, to adjust. But once you have your family's heart set on a certain dish, sometimes that's hard to change, right?
Yeah.
So cooking is really important. Food literacy is really important. And it's something that you can build with your family. I think there's lots of opportunities to do that these days.
Yeah, it's one of our family favorite things to do together as a family is to get those children, our three boys, into the kitchen and helping to chop vegetables, talking about vegetables, where they come from, especially with composting, talking about food waste, all of those things. It's become a bit of an obsession in my home, and I kind of like that I'm, you know, trying at least to cultivate these little foodies, these little food conscious human beings that can, you know, maybe cook something by the time they're 12 or 13.
Well, I think that's great. And I think more families are doing that. Just the earlier you get your kids involved in food prep and food at home, you know, the more knowledgeable they become. And I think, you know, we see those shifts in knowledge that kids have about food. Millennials think about food pretty differently than, you know, boomers did when they were that age. I think they're more aware of food trends. They're more concerned about animal welfare. And, you know, the food industry is adapting to that.
Dr. Erna Van Duren, professor from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Guelph, I thank you so much for your time and expertise this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Stay warm. Thank you. Okay, let's take a break. Let's come back with, let's continue with the food. So I was out for lunch yesterday with a girlfriend, and something happened at the table next to us that really made my skirt fly up, got my goat. And I was a little astounded, not by the child's behavior, but by the mom's behavior. We're going to talk about that after this on 570 News.
When extreme weather hits, count on the 570 Extreme Weather Center, exclusively on 570 News.
Okay, back we come. Let's continue to talk about food. So I went out yesterday to one of my favorite little sushi haunts in Kitchener and met a girlfriend there. It was kind of business, kind of pleasure. So we were catching up and having a chat. Though this is a small restaurant, so the tables are relatively close together. The tables are pretty close together. And there was this family. Well, there was two women and a little toddler, a little girl toddler who came in and sat right beside our table. And quickly, like right away when they sat down at the table, the mom gave the toddler a tablet, which I've been guilty of doing too. Sometimes, listen, I'm not trying to judge your momminess fully, completely. Just a little bit. So I have done it. Sometimes you need to have some lunch with your friends, and if it's going to take, and you want to sit and eat for a little while, and I get it, you brought the tech just in case. Now, I would have saved the tech till the kids started to act all rangy, but again, you'd be you. But what kind of bugged me about the situation and the scene was they gave the toddler a tablet. Then this is not a place that has a kids menu. Like, I mean, so it's not, you're not expecting a certain level of noise, I suppose, is my complaint here. So the kid turns on the tablet and starts watching like a cartoon. And that's all we can hear is this cartoon blaring from the tablet at the table beside us. And I was like, okay, if you're going to bring your child a tablet, perhaps you could bring headphones to a restaurant. And like, is that unreasonable? Star 570-519-570-2545. And I was supposed to talk about how George and Amal Clooney gave headphones to their fellow passengers on the flight with their 6-month-old twins. But, I had to make it all about me there because I had a headphone story and a kid story from yesterday. I just thought it was so inconsiderate. It's so, by all means, you do you when you're parenting. But if you're kind of encroaching on other people's, lunching time. And again, it wasn't like a Jack Astor's or a place that's, loud and has a kid's menu and kind of stuff like that. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to bring your children to a restaurant, well, A, I would use that opportunity to try to teach them how to behave. I would just use the tablet maybe as a last resort. But headphones, come on. I just thought it was super inconsiderate. And then I posted about it on Facebook and a lot of people seemed to agree with me. And then other people were like, no, I do it all the time. So I just couldn't believe it. We were coming to the end of our lunch, so we were just about done. But Polly, what do you think? And I was a little alarmed. Like, I looked over, really? I have to listen to Peppa Pig?
Yeah, they should have brought headphones. Be considerate.
Be considerate. Or go to the place with the kidding menu and the ball pit if you really want to entertain your child during. And again, I have brought now, not anymore. My kids are old enough to know better. Like, you're going to sit, you're going to eat, you're going to behave. I'm not going to bribe you with anything here. But when my kids were toddlers, of course I did that sometimes because I wanted to eat too. Anyway, I just thought that was really kind of an obvious thing. And, but I did not shoot her the Campbell death stare, Polly. You'll be proud of me. I did not shoot darts from forth my eyes onto the table next to me. Usually, because when I do that, somebody's like, aren't you the girl from the... And then I get called out, I can't be too much of a bitch in public. Just on the internet. All right. Remember that video last week of that... it was kind of heartbreaking. This polar bear that appeared to be starving and kind of wandering around looking for food in the Canadian Arctic. We are going to discuss that story because perhaps we were mistaken. What we got wrong about that viral video of the starving polar bear. Tristan Hopper from the National Post joins us after the news next at 9:30 to discuss.
With all the technology at our disposal, it's a shame that most of it is wasted on nonsense. Download the 570 News app at 570news.com and stay informed.
For coming back with us, watching us on Rogers Television and listening to us on 570 News. So yeah, I didn't want to get mad about the mom in the restaurant giving her child a tablet with no headphones, even though that child didn't ask for the tablet or didn't even behave like a two. The child wasn't crawling under the, under the table or behaving in any sort of terrible way. So I was just like, if you're going to bring a tablet to a restaurant, bring headphones because, this is an adult restaurant. There is no kids menu. And I don't think I should have to listen to Peppa Pig while I enjoy my sashimi. I just don't think I should. And I have three children, so I get it. I get it that sometimes, you get to bribe them, but... Headphones. So Brad emails in on that one. Jennifer at 570news.com. Hey, Jennifer, I first and foremost am about quality time when out with family. I instill manners, as does my wife and our children. I understand there are times that technology catches up and helps, but it's absolute ignorance to not at least think about headphones. Everyone's sharing the same space and deserves their peace. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Brad. This is from Dory. Dory sends a message. About your tablet and kid chat. Yes, that's annoying. I would have politely asked if it could be turned down. A lot of people are clueless and inconsiderate. I've sat in the public library and tried to read while a mother and daughter sat on either side of me and loudly had discussions across my back. Get a clue, folks. Well, and that's a thing too, Dory, isn't it? Have you been to the library lately? Remember we talked a couple weeks ago the name escapes me. Shame on me. It doesn't matter. I mean, she totally matters. She's amazing and her name just escapes me. But the library is a whole new place, isn't it? You don't get, there's no shushing when you're at the library anymore. In fact, it's kind of this invigorating, wonderful, creative, open space to share thoughts and ideas and not just read books. But Dory, of course, there are places in the library, of course, that you should go to find some solace and some quiet. And perhaps that, mother-daughter team could go elsewhere. Also, good for the mom for taking the kid to the library, too. Okay, so do you guys remember this story? I'm sure you do. This popped up in my social media feeds quite a few times last week about this polar bear who was apparently starving. I mean, it was kind of heartbreaking to see the images. It was an emaciated polar bear digging through garbage and was quickly branded as, you know, the face of climate change. However, does this bear's plight have anything to do with climate change? Let's talk now to the always entertaining and the wonderful Tristan Hopper from the National Post. Hello. Good morning to you, Tristan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. And further to the headphone argument, we had an intern at the Edmonton office where I work who came in and conducted all his interviews by yelling into a speakerphone. So guess which intern never got a job?
See, that's exactly it, Tristan. These people were setting their child up to be unemployed forever.
That's right.
Just blame it on the parents. Yeah, well, and it's funny to me that there's not this kind of like, that this happens as much as it does, where you're like subjected to what people are listening to or who they're talking to, or that there doesn't seem to be this kind of like adherence to the social expectation of, you know, please keep your conversations to yourself. It's weird to me.
For someone who is just terrified that anybody knows anything about my life at all times, it's like just walking onto a bus and seeing someone just eating out of a jar of mayonnaise. Just like that shouldn't be doing. That shouldn't be happening.
Yes.
So yeah, that's what a lack of headphones looks like to me.
I asked them earlier. I was like, I don't know. Tristan's always so funny. How am I going to like transition from funny Tristan into starving polar bears? But there is good news in this story that you write for the National Post, because apparently we were kind of misled when it came to the imagery behind this starving polar bear.
Oh, yes, you were absolutely misled. So what this was, this starving polar bear, and I guess the first thing to remember is that if you ask people who actually live in the Arctic, and a lot of the news stories didn't, I mean, they will say, well, yeah, there's been starving polar bears since time immemorial. Because there's one thing about polar bears that everyone forgets. You never see a starving deer or a starving moose because they're prey. So the minute they start getting weak, something kills them and eats it. But nothing kills and eats polar bears. They're top of the food chain. I mean, they will even hunt humans if they're unarmed. So you got to think, if the polar bear hasn't drowned and if it hasn't gotten shot, I mean, this is what it's going to look like at the end of its life, whether that's an injury, whether that's cancer or whatever. This is what the last days of a polar bear are probably going to look like. So the number one thing is, this was put out by the organization Sea Legacy. It was an activist group, and they're saying, well, this is what the effects of climate change will look like. But they don't know why that polar bear was sick. They're heavily implying, of course, because it didn't have access to sea ice and thus wasn't able to hunt. But they even conceded when pressed on the point. They said, well, we don't know why it died and why it was starving. And then, polar bear scientists I spoke to for the piece said there could be any number of reasons why this polar bear is emaciated, and it's not unusual. And if I was there, I would have called a conservation officer to shoot it, euthanize it, put it out of its misery, and then perform a necropsy, and then we could figure out why it was that sick, rather than just assuming, oh, climate change did it.
Right, and I think that so much importance in all of those words you just spoke, especially considering that, you know, the people who caught these images obviously have an agenda and have a vested interest and are activists. I mean, they are for conservation, and I don't think they should be, you know, chastised for caring and being passionate about their cause. But certainly, perhaps that information could have been a little more, you know, leveled.
Yeah. Activist groups can be good at pushing news and pushing narrative. But, you know, as the media, we have to be skeptical because obviously they have a very clear agenda, an extremely clear agenda. If you go to their website, Sea Legacy, it's founded by Canadian photographer Paul Micklin. You've recognized his images. I think he's on the Apple screensaver. I mean, he's very famous. He's very good at what he does. But he also knows a lot about public relations, as does everyone else at this group. If you go to their website, they say, we are trying to find images that tug at the heartstrings and which inspire people to take action. Now, you could say that's good. A lot of people in the Arctic would say, well, emotionally driven campaigns aren't always good, because it wasn't too long ago that hunters up there were royally screwed by Greenpeace and other campaigns to basically ratchet down the seal hunt, which was a sustainable hunt. I mean, you don't get more free reign than a seal. I mean, the only reason you would ban a seal hunt is because you don't like the idea of a seal getting bashed in the face. So basically, you had another emotionally driven campaign in the Arctic, a very similar model, which decimated the Arctic fur trade and decimated the Arctic economy. So my read of this recent polar bear thing is some of the fiercest voices against this campaign have been Inuit voices in the Arctic, just saying, you know, speak to some people who actually live here, get your full context before you use a video of one sick polar bear to decide that the Arctic is doomed.
Yeah, and I hope that we're into a time perhaps where we're understanding that, you know, we need to, you know, I have a weird relation into kind of, you know, talking about privilege and such, but I think it's time, and perhaps in this time we're in, we're starting to understand that, you know, perhaps we don't always know better and we don't know what's best. And perhaps, like you said, we should speak to the people, the Inuit, who have been there for thousands of years and understand not just the climate, but the wildlife and its relevance. Perhaps that, you know, perhaps if it were years ago, the situation would have been different with the seal trade if we had been in this time of perhaps listening instead of preaching so much.
Yeah, and the science, the large body of existing science that exists for something like this. So, I mean, once you start piling context onto that images, it gets less and less powerful with each piece of information. So, number one, that bear was most likely photographed in an area where bear populations are actually doing quite well. That's the weird thing. I mean, disappearing sea ice is obviously bad for polar bears. No polar bear scientist is going to say, oh, they'll be fine with an open ocean. But it hasn't affected polar bear populations equally and in the with the same intensity that may have been predicted about 15 to 20 years ago. So Baffin Island, so that's where this photograph comes from, for the most part, most Baffin Island polar bear populations are either stable or they're actually increasing. Now, there's a number of reasons why that might be happening. There might be an exodus of bears from worse regions that are going there. But essentially, this is one of the few areas in the Arctic where polar bear populations aren't being hammered. They're actually doing quite well. So that makes this bear not tremendously representative of the polar bear's plight in that region. And then there is the pretty reasonable argument that if you're going around saying, here's a sick polar bear, that's the face of climate change, you need to care about climate change because this polar bear got sick. That's a pretty easy argument if you're a climate denier to refute.
Yeah.
All you have to go up to the Arctic, find one of Canada's many hundreds of fat polar bears and say, oh, here's the fat one, they're fine.
It doesn't help the cause for, you know, when science, I think, and has been quite clear that climate change is real, but there are still a lot of people who want to deny it. And things like this, stunts like this, certainly don't help the cause to perhaps bring that level of understanding to people who simply say that it's, you know, it's not real.
Yeah, and it sort of misrepresents the scientific basis behind all these claims. So the reason we know that the Earth is warming due to human causes and why it's going to continue to warming without arresting carbon emissions is because of a whole body of science over years. This was scientists, you know, who didn't lose their virginity until 25 because they were just calculating data sets and, you know, hanging out in the Arctic and freezing and risking their lives and just, you know, doing math for years and years and years, sending up satellites. Same with polar bears. I mean, the people I quoted in this story have been studying polar bears for years. And I was saying, well, how would it's just the meticulousness that they would need to do before they could make a claim that this polar bear is representative. So I spoke to one, Andrew Durocher. He said, well, if I was there and I saw the sick polar bear, I would perform the necropsy, see why it was starving, and then I'd do that for 100 other polar bears. And if a pattern emerged, then I could make a claim. So it's much, much more difficult than simply seeing a sick polar bear and then immediately misrepresenting it as representative of the entire Arctic. So when you do things like this, and this is what I've heard from scientists, I quote in the story, it makes it look like the science behind polar bears is equally sloppy, that they're just heading up on expeditions and, oh, these polar bears look sick. I guess they're endangered now, rather than it's a much less unsexy process by which something like that is determined.
I love the tweet that you included in your piece in the Post arguing climate change is real because of a video of one sick bear is like claiming that it's a hoax because yesterday it snowed in southern Texas. A tweet from a biologist from the University of Sherbrooke that puts it very plainly, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I live in Alberta. I think that's ground zero for old people saying, oh, it's warm today in the winter. It is climate change hoax because it's warm. But this is the exact same logic. When someone else is saying, well, this polar bear is sick, thus we have to agree with climate change. And, you know, a lot of emotion both sides. They're both using the same logic, using anecdotal information that is unrelated to climate change, potentially, to argue about this major scientific theory.
Tristan Hopper from the National Post, always such fun with you, sir. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Take good care. Bye-bye. 9:46. So there you have it. The heartstrings were pulled and the emotion, I thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Awful. And so good. I'm glad to hear from Tristan Hopper and the National Post that there was much more to that video of the polar bear. And I mean, gosh, even Catherine McKenna, who's Canada's Minister of Environment and Climate Change, she tweeted out, you know, this is what climate change looks like. So we're all easily drawn in to, as Tristan said, you know, our emotions being affected when we're shown images like this. So hopefully that bear had a very long, fruitful existence. And like all of us, you know, get busy living. Or get busy dying. 9:47. Swearing is good for you. Polly's got probably one of the cleanest mouths in this building. Can I just say? He does. So, Polly, I'm going to tell you why you need to dirty it up, Polly. You need to let the words fly. Coming up after this, it's the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News.
Your home for Buffalo Bills football. 570 News.
What goes on with the internet connect? Don't we work for Rogers? Don't we own like the internet or something? Why at this time, Polly, every morning does my internet connection revert back to dial-up? Can anybody explain this to me? Because I'm getting emails from you guys on the polar bear situation, but sadly, my computer can't keep up with your brilliance, and nor can my phone here, so I don't. Who do I call? I'm calling Rogers' head office, and I'm going to say, listen, I'm an employee, darn it. Give me a better signal. So let's hope I can get back to your emails on that one in just a second. Okay, craziest story of the day as we kind of get into the pile of fun before we tell you why you should swear. Did you hear this story about the doctor in England? He was a renowned surgeon. I mean, he was a transplant doctor, saved many, 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 many lives doing liver transplants. And as a matter of fact, part of the story, and again, forgive me because I'm not, I had researched the story, but my internet doesn't want to cooperate, so I don't want to get things wrong, but I'll give you the gist. So this doctor, revered around the world for being the transplant doctor. As a matter of fact, one time there was a liver on a plane. The plane crashed. Somehow they got to the liver, got the liver from the plane, took it back, and had a successful transplant. Like, this guy was good, really good. So does, all of these transplants over all of these years, much success, heavily awarded and respected, until a couple weeks ago when this story emerges that a woman, she wasn't doing well. Her liver transplant wasn't healing normally. So this guy, this doctor, this surgeon who had performed the liver transplant was not available. So they get a couple of other doctors to go in to see what's going on. They get inside her body. Are you guys ready for this? They get inside her body, and on her liver, they see the doctor's initials. The doctor, the renowned, award-winning doctor who's rescuing livers from plane crashes, is also using a laser to carve his initials into the patients who he's giving life to. Crazy. He admits to it. He pleads guilty to assault after burning his initials on his patient's livers. Is this the craziest thing you've heard today or what? He says that there were no issues. There were no side effects. It was totally fine. They would never have discovered that until they had to go in and open this woman up again. Although, you know what? If you save my life and I'm going to get another 20 years on this green earth, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. Do you even care? I wonder if some of his patients are like, oh, doesn't matter to me. Doesn't matter to me at all. Anyway, I just thought that was the kookiest story I'd read today. Okay, Polly, you have a pretty good grasp on the Queen's English. You don't drop a lot of F-bombs. You don't. I mean, comparatively to the people who we work with, who, I mean, I have a bad potty mouth. James, yep, he's up there. He's in my realm. James is in my realm. And I always, people have said to me socially, how do you go on the radio and not swear for that amount of time during the day? And I'm like, that's why I do swear so much, because I'm censored for 5 hours, 6 hours a day. So after I get off the air, I just do the George Carlin, like all the words you're not allowed to say.
Well, that's the thing. I let the occasional word go, but I'm like, I'm worried that if it becomes part of a habit, it will slip out when I say something on the air. I'm just worried that I'm just going to subconsciously say something.
Out.
I won't even notice it.
I've almost a couple times. But then I say, I get a little liberal with the words. I mean, I will use the donkey behind word. And I, you know, I think a few hours ago, I said I was a bitch, didn't I? Say, anyway, you know. So I stretch the line a little bit. Producer James, yeah, potty mouth?
I'm a huge potty mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's part of my prairie blood in me.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know.
Like it's beeping cold.
Yeah. Any time that I can use it to describe something where it's like I need to say that it's cold, I use a swear word to enhance how cold it is or whatever the case might be. And I've never used a swear word purposely on the radio before.
No,
never.
Not like me. Like I just push the limit.
I might have said hell once on the air.
Yeah.
But, you just did it again?
Was twice. Well, here's the thing, you guys. Studies show that people who are more intelligent swear more than because we often have heard, you know, oh, you know, it just shows a lack of intellect because you default to these easy, dirty words instead of coming up with a better adjective. Well, that's off the table now. So next time somebody tells you that, say, listen, want to take an IQ test? You beep and beep.
They might beat me in that IQ test. I think I'm one of the out of the majority here.
How about this? These are reasons why you should curse. How swearing makes your life better. It's the best form of workplace bonding. Research shows that coworkers who swear work more effectively together, feel closer, and are more productive than the stick-in-the-muds who do not curse. Forget team building. Let's just let her fly.
That newsroom, they're pretty mouthy too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's not good though when you work in radio and there's those seven words that you're not allowed to say. Or not allowed to swear at work.
But funny thing is, and this gets asked to me a lot at parties, how come I hear them on whatever station say, you know, this and this and this and this and this? And Polly, you can back me up on this. Here's the rule in radio, you guys. I can say whatever I want. I could come out here and say all seven of those words in a row. But if someone complains...
Yeah, if nobody complains, you don't get in trouble.
That's right. So you got to know your audience. You have to know your audience, right? Because the things they're saying on some of those, you know, 18 to 24 male-dominated stations, well, those guys love it. They're not calling the CRTC. You guys will call the CRTC on me, and I know it, so
that's
I don't
right,
say it.
Yeah.
It helps prevent fights. Swearing will actually make people less likely to be physically violent by getting their aggression out without physical harm. It can help you figure out someone's political leanings. Studies show that left-wing folks swear more on social media than their conservative counterparts. Well, that explains it, too. Bunch of snowflakes over here. And it's funny. It just makes your life a little bit better. I especially like it when people come up with their own, you know, their own swear words. And you know the rule in my house for my kids, you have to have a job and a driver's license before you're allowed to swear. You have to have both of those things. So the favorite swear word, swearing in my house right now is cotton-headed ninny muggins. That's everybody. from Elf.
I love that. That is the best.
That's everybody's favorite curse word right now. That was fun. Thanks so much, everybody. I hope you enjoy the rest of this day. And thanks for the emails and the invigorating conversations. And Farwell is going to take you right through the rest of the afternoon. I'll see you in the morning.